10, 10, 10. Today is going to be one of the busiest days of the year for registry offices, because couples are joining hands today in the hope that this auspicious day will bring them happiness. Some registry offices, such as Chichester, will be open today for the first time ever, based on demand. And in Manchester, it's only going to be the third time it's been open on a Sunday since 1837. But today is also Micah Challenge Sunday, and we're joining hands with our brothers and sisters around the world. Our prayer is 100 million Christians will join hands to express our solidarity with the poor. We're joining hands to call for justice. 10 years after nations around the world agreed to halve global poverty by 2015. Here are some of the global development goals which our government and governments right around the world committed themselves to eradicate extreme poverty and hunger, to achieve universal primary education, to promote gender equality and empower women, to reduce child mortality, to improve maternal health, to combat HIV, AIDS, malaria, and other diseases, to ensure environmental sustainability, and develop a global partnership for development. The Apostle Paul writes in Galatians, "All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do." The question we're thinking about today is, are we eager, like Paul, to do the same? Not just to pray for the poor, but to do something about it. Because as Christians, we want to declare God's heart for the poor. We want to remind our political leaders that halving poverty is a moral imperative. That's why we're asking you to leave your handprint with your signature. Signatures are legally binding agreements. We want you to put your hand and your signature on this roll, and we're going to take it to Philip Hammond, our MP. There are so many proverbs that talk about the hand. Talk about the hand. A bird in the hand is... lend a hand. Many hands make... hands that do dishes. Sorry. You know what the world's most deadly but preventable disease is? It's not cancer. It's not polio. It's not AIDS. It's something even more debilitating. It's discouragement. It's easy to become discouraged when we consider the enormity of the global challenge we face in 5 years to halve extreme poverty, the challenge to reverse climate change, or nearer at home, to fulfill our 2020 vision and our five-year plan goals. It is so easy to become discouraged. Discouragement is a deadly disease. It's universal. One in four of us will suffer from depression this year, one in four. But every single one of us will get discouraged at some point, sooner or later. I know I do, and I'm pretty certain you do. It's universal. Secondly, it's recurring. It's recurring. We have multiple opportunities to get discouraged every day. It's universal, it's recurring, and it's contagious. It's contagious. It's highly contagious. My discouragement will infect you, and your discouragement will infect me so easily. It rubs off. But there is good news. Discouragement is curable. The next installment in our story in Nehemiah illustrates the causes and the cures for discouragement. The question we're asking ourselves is, how can I handle discouragement? We're going to see that together, when we join hands, when we work together, when we watch each other's back, when we encourage one another, we can banish discouragement. We can make a difference. I invite you to turn with me to Nehemiah chapter 4. You'll remember that Nehemiah was a leader of God's people. They'd returned to Israel from exile in Babylon, and their objective was to build the walls around Jerusalem. They needed it for security and to protect them from their enemies. And when they began the work, there was zeal, there was excitement, there was fervor. But after a while, they got discouraged. Notice the change of heart from verse 6. So we rebuilt the walls till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. But verse 12, then the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times over, wherever you turn, they will attack us. What happened between verse 6 and verse 12? Maybe you can identify more with verse 12 than verse 6. And there is an outline, by the way. I hope you've got it in your weekly news. You may like to follow the outline with me. Maybe you are discouraged right now. Well, this story shows why people become discouraged and how we can overcome discouragement. Nehemiah shows us what to do when we feel like giving up. Let's look, first of all, at 4 causes of discouragement. And the first one is fatigue. If you want to be discouraged, tire yourself out. The first step to discouragement is to work every hour God gives you, including Sundays. Okay, some of you are smiling. The people of Judah said, the strength of the laborers is giving out, verse 10. They were working from sunrise to when the stars came out. They were physically exhausted, emotionally drained. It says, verse 23, they didn't even change their clothes. They went to bed wearing the same clothes. They were so focused on this one task, they became fatigued. When does the fatigue come? Notice verse 6. When we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height. Was the cup half empty or the cup half full? It's all to do with your perspective, isn't it? When are you apt to get discouraged? Usually when you're halfway through a project. Have you ever painted a room? You get excited choosing the colour. You get the room ready for enthusiasm. You start painting with energy. You stop for a coffee. And as you get up, you ache. And you notice the drops of paint on the floor and on your clothes. And you realize you're not even halfway through. The light begins to fade. You begin to get weary. You look around at how much more you've got to do. And then you remember you've got to clean up the drips. You've got to clean the brushes. And discouragement sets in. What's the antidote? Have a sleep. Go to bed. A good night's sleep is a remedy for fatigue. But fatigue is the number one cause of discouragement. That's why we leave so many things half done, half finished, incomplete, undone. If you want to be discouraged, get fatigued. Tire yourself out. Secondly, frustration. Accumulate some rubbish. Notice verse 10. There was so much rubble that we cannot build the wall. Notice what they're saying? We can't build the wall because there's too much rubble. They were not only fatigued, they were frustrated. They were trying to build a new wall, and all around them were the old walls, the rocks, the debris, the mortar. It discouraged them looking at the problem, not the solution. They lost sight of their goal and they got distracted by the rubble. And that happens to us too. Whenever we focus on our problems, on the rubble instead of our goals, we're going to get discouraged. For years, I wouldn't let any of you into my study because it was out of control. I was so preoccupied with preparing the next sermon, visiting the next person, writing on my blog. I was too busy to file my folders, prune my papers, or sort my books. And I kept putting off the day. And it got more and more frustrating until there was no natural light coming into my room. Apart from this kind of a pillbox part of the window above the books. And then I decided I needed a new computer. And the narrow path from my door to the computer, I thought, I'm not going to get a new computer in here. So I removed everything from my study last summer. And I started again. And it's tidy and it's organized and I'm very impressed to show it off. I cleared away the rubbish. I focused on my work now without being distracted. What is it that's distracting you from your priorities? Discouragement comes easiest when we're fatigued. Secondly, when we're frustrated. Thirdly, notice what happened. If you want to be discouraged, Focus on being a failure and listen to demotivators. There's a third reason why the people got discouraged. They listened to the demotivators. Verse 10, we cannot rebuild the wall. Now, think about that. Who said, we cannot rebuild the wall? Someone had to set them off. Someone with the gift of demotivation. You know, it's really hardly likely that in unison, in harmony, they all said together, we cannot rebuild the walls. Someone used the royal we first. And everyone else, like Chicken Little, believed it and repeated it. Isn't that what happened? Because they couldn't finish their task as quickly as they had hoped, they lost heart and they became demotivated. You know, it only takes one person with a gift of demotivation in a church or in an organization to destroy the morale of a team. You get a bunch of them together and cynicism and despair are inevitable. You know, there's even a website dedicated to this specialist ministry. It's called despair.com, and I recommend it, despair.com. Have a look. There are some fantastic posters which you can buy that will help motivate you by helping to point you to where demotivation will lead you. Blame. The secret of success is knowing who to blame for your failures. Or ambition. The journey of 1,000 miles sometimes ends very, very badly. Or misfortune, while good fortune often leads you, this kind never misses. Or mistakes. It could be that the purpose of your life is only to serve as a warning to others. I like that one especially. The fact is, it was not true. They could rebuild the walls. It wasn't a question of their ability, it was their motivation. They had the resources, they had the time and the personnel, but they didn't have the heart. So how do you handle failure in your life? Do you say, woe is me? Or do you start complaining? Do you blame other people? Everyone else has let me down. They didn't do their job. The difference between winners and losers is that winners see failure as a temporary inconvenience. Failure does not have to be terminal. It can be a learning opportunity. But if you want to be discouraged, get fatigued, become frustrated, and focus on failure. And there's a fourth way to discouragement in this passage, and that's fear. Become paralyzed by your critics. What do they say in verse 11? Our enemies said, before they know it or see us, we will be right there among them and we'll kill them and put an end to their work. Notice who said this. Their enemies? No, it wasn't their enemies who said that. They said it. They said it. Nehemiah's people said, our enemies say. The wall around the city represented safety and defense. It was there to protect them. Clearly, their enemies didn't want them to finish it. So we see in the text, they got criticized. They got ridiculed. They even had threats. We're going to kill you if you keep on building the wall. Notice who it was that was discouraged first. Who got discouraged first? Verse 12. The Jews who live near the enemy. If you don't want to get discouraged, don't live near your enemies. Move away. If someone is persistently critical or negative, move away from them. Otherwise, you're going to get infected. If you hear someone say repeatedly, it can't be done, you're going to fail, you're wasting your time, pretty soon you're going to believe them. The answer? Stay away from people like that. People have a negative spirit. Avoid them like the plague unless you want to be infected. And how can you tell whether your discouragement is caused by fear of embarrassment or fear of criticism or fear of failure? You get that deep, deep sense inside that you want to run. You want to flee. That's because the natural reaction to fear is to escape. Now do you see how lethal discouragement can be? Do you see the downward spiral that begins with fatigue, tiring themselves out, frustration, accumulating the rubbish, failure, listening to demotivate us, and finally fear, allowing critics to paralyze? These are the timeless symptoms of discouragement. But the good news is that Nehemiah not only tells us the causes of discouragement, he gives us the antidote too. What is the antidote to discouragement? What did Nehemiah do? Well, as a wise leader, Nehemiah assessed the situation and he took direct and decisive action. He corrected the causes of the discouragement. And we need to do the same. When you feel discouraged to the point of wanting to give up, you can do three things to remedy the situation. You need to remember certain things, reorganize, and resist. First of all, remember they turn to the Lord. Verse 14, Nehemiah said, "After I looked things over, I stood up and said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, don't be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome." What does it mean to remember the Lord? Well, it means to remember his character. It means to remember his faithfulness. It means to remember his promises. It means to remember that he has saved you and adopted you into his family. You have brothers and sisters to support and encourage you. Remember, he is with you. Recommit yourself to him and his family. Whether you feel him or not, if you trust in Christ, he is with you. He promises, "I can do everything through Christ who strengthens me." He promises, "Nothing can separate you from the love of God." Nothing. If God is for us, who can be against us? When you get discouraged, get your mind off your circumstances and onto the Lord. Remember, your thoughts determine your feelings. So if you're discouraged this morning, maybe it's because you want to be discouraged. Maybe it's because you are not focusing on the Lord. Choose some uplifting verses to remember. Everything is possible for him who believes. Remember, they turned to the Lord. The second thing they did was they reorganized. They prioritized their work. Verse 13. "Therefore, I stationed some of the people behind the lowest points of the wall at the exposed places, posting them by families with their swords, their spears, and their bows." Nehemiah made some strategic decisions. He prioritized where they were most vulnerable, where the wall was lowest, normally on the northern side of Jerusalem, because that's where the enemies always attacked from, where the people were exposed. He encouraged them by being strategic in allocating their resources. They strengthened their defenses where needed most. He prioritized. He organized the workers by families. He got them building the wall nearest their homes, so they've got a motivation. And they worked in teams, notice. Some laboring, some defending. There was ownership, collaboration, partnership. And as a result, they completed the task. When you get discouraged, what do you do? What should you do? Pray intelligently, think strategically, avoid critics, and find like-minded believers who will encourage you. What are my priorities? Who can I partner with in this? Who can I turn to for advice and support? What was Nehemiah's objective? To build the walls, to protect his people. He knew that a discouraged people needed support that they could give it to one another if they focused on their common objectives and not listened to the voice of their enemy. That's why we encourage you to serve in teams, not just to volunteer as individuals, but to see yourself as on a team, working together, cooperating. That's why in our weekly news this week, there are some opportunities to join a team. There are three different hospitality teams. There's an opportunity to join the connection delivery team, if the Lord prompts you. The antidote, therefore, to discouragement, remember, they turn to the Lord. Reorganize, they prioritize their work. And lastly, resist, they defended their families. Verse 14, remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your people, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes. Nehemiah encouraged them to help one another. And he did so in several strategic ways. Notice verses 16 and 17. From that day on, they did things differently. Half of my men did the work, while the other half were equipped with spears. The officers posted themselves behind the people who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held the weapon in the other. So half the people worked and the other half rested. One half labored, the other watched. And where were the leaders? They put themselves between the enemy and the people. They led by example. They defended the workers by watching their backs. And then to increase solidarity, Nehemiah adds in verses 19 and 20, then I said to the nobles and the officials and the rest of the people, the work is extensive, we are spread out, we are widely separated. Wherever you hear the sound of the trumpet, join us there. Our God will fight us. The people knew they were spread out. They were vulnerable. And so if an attack came, the trumpet would sound and the people would rally to wherever the trumpet sound came from. They knew that although they were spread out, if trouble came, they would be united and they would work together to defeat their enemy. What happened? Verse 15. When our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to his own work. The very people who had cried, we cannot build the wall, completed the task in 52 days. Why? Because they remembered the Lord, because they prioritized their work, and they defended their families. As we're going to read from next week on, there were further setbacks, there was more opposition, but Nehemiah concludes, so the wall was completed on the 25th of Elul in 52 days. When all our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that this work had been done with the help of our God. In 52 days, they protected their families, they defeated their enemies. And behind their enemies was the evil one. The devil is called the accuser of our brothers and sisters, Revelation 12. And he uses the same tactics today. Discouragement is one of his favorite tools. He knows that when we're down, our effectiveness is neutralized and we're tempted to give up. And too often Christians suffer from friendly fire. We accuse one another and we do the devil's work for him. The Apostle James says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. James 4:7. Resist him. Resist his discouraging thoughts. Avoid his messengers. Protect your family from harmful influences. Guard your church from evil schemes. The antidote, therefore, to discouragement, remember, they turn to the Lord. Reorganize, they prioritize their work. And resist, they defended their families. Resist those who might discourage you. Protect your family, guard your church. Discouragement is a choice. Courageous people do not give up, even in the face of fatigue, frustration, fear, or failure. Their strength is found in Christ alone. Their courage comes from sharing and serving with one another. Their fulfillment comes from doing God's will. And we can too, if we put our hand to it.